AWR powered by SID Media.
And hence this conversation with Lesego Mafora. He is an internationally certified project manager. How amazing is that? Currently serving as the strategic relations manager at Jumpstart Foundation, which is an organization aimed at the advancement and development of youth in and outside the classroom. Good morning, Lesego. I'm very excited to have you this morning. Thank you so much for joining me.
Good morning, Millicent. It's a pleasure to be on your station this morning.
Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about. I don't know. I hope we'll do justice to it because we want to make it as practical as possible. You know, at the end of the conversation, we want people to feel like, okay, there is where I can start, you know, because you look on social media and uyakhala, you see people are living, you know, social influencers seem to just have it so easy. And you wonder, yeah, how am I going to get it? And maybe some people have started YouTube channels and online whatevers, but their numbers are not growing. The money is not coming in. How do some people get it right and how do others not get it right? So we want to make sure that, you know, we really, really help each other in young people in particular, to make it in the world. We can definitely agree, right, that the world has changed remarkably. I don't know the time frame to use, but let's just stick with the past 2 years. It's changed incredibly. And if you look from maybe the Industrial Revolution, what more during that, you know, those time frames, it has really, really changed. Lesego, as someone who has been around the world, as someone who has been given, you know, a whole international certified project manager, achievement, how is Africa and Southern Africa in particular faring with regards to what is now the fourth industrial revolution? Are we ready?
Millicent, I think this is a really important question, and it's critical around how we're going to shape, you know, the future of this country and the future of our youth going forward. We know that South Africa is beset with the triple challenge of income inequality, unemployment and poverty. And also we seem to be deindustrializing our economy, you know, with, you know, big industries like mining, which has been now moving towards a more mechanized, less labor intensive, you know, to drive up profits and, you know, for their shareholders. And this has caused a number of challenges and has been exacerbated by the pandemic.
Oh, yeah.
You know that, you know, prior to the outbreak of the pandemic, there were always concerns around what 4IR meant, especially for South Africa and Africans in general. And I think one of the things that we saw was that there was a call from labor unions and other interested stakeholders around protecting jobs and making sure that, you know, labor-intensive industries are sort of shielded from automation and technology. But what COVID did is that it forced us to change the way that we work, the way that we live, the way that we socialize. And unfortunately, we've been left with no chance but to embrace the much dreaded 4IR. So I think what's important is that even though there's a high risk of people losing their jobs to automation or people being basically outskilled by the needs of the economy, it seems important that we start to look at opportunities that are available to us. I think when we look at the things that started to emerge during the pandemic, you know, linked to 4IR, is that we saw a lot of opportunities emerge, for example, with online food ordering, telemedicine, and other sort of innovations that helped to mitigate the impact of COVID-19. A lot of us, you know, started going to our meetings, you know, in our pajamas via Google and Microsoft Teams. So our whole existence has sort of changed, and the way that we engage with each other changed. But this has to be placed in the context of South Africa and where we come from, the history from apartheid, and some of the, you know, the shortcomings that we experienced, particularly for the marginalized populations of South Africa.
So true.
So what we need to be doing now is finding modalities and mechanisms by which we can become more inclusive, utilizing technology to ensure that, you know, we we begin to thrive. We leverage this technology to the benefit of our people.
I like that, you know, and you use the word opportunities quite a number of times, because the reality is that you sometimes, as the world continues to progress, the rich get richer, the poor get poorer, and whenever there is some kind of revolutionary change like this, there are people like those marginalized that you mentioned who will be left on the outskirts, and they'll be even further marginalized from the new economy and the new society that we are heading up to. So in what ways, with unemployment really skyrocketing in our country, and we know that it's also a place of refuge for many people outside of South Africa, and they also coming to find an economic haven here. The opportunities are scarce for all of us. Some people might be more entrepreneurial than others, but in what ways is it possible to even for young people to use this as an advantage to themselves, despite it being a very bleak moment seemingly in our history?
Yeah, you know, this is a critical issue. I think, you know, looking at the work that we do at Jumpstart and how youth form, you know, a critical focus of our work and creating those opportunities, it's imperative that not just the, you know, civil society, but across the board, government, business, etc., find innovative ways of dealing with the problem. We sit in a situation where, not just in South Africa, but across the world, there's a lack of employment opportunities, and it's creating massive concern. I think when we look at Africa generally, we have over 140 million unemployed youth between the ages of 15 and 35. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those numbers are staggering. Mm-hmm. And this has only been made worse by the COVID pandemic. You know, there were mass layoffs and reductions in work hours. So there's been a lot of negative impact in terms of opportunities, especially for young people. But there are mechanisms in place to try to that have been put in place to try to mitigate the impact. One of the things that we need to focus on is the integration of entrepreneurship and innovation into education. So we all have been, you know, a lot of us have grown up in an environment where we considered going to school and getting a degree and or a diploma, and then going to find a job in a, you know, in a big industry or a big business that will then, you know, cater for our lives going forward. But the reality is that those opportunities are becoming less and less available to the majority of people. We sit in a situation where we have high levels of youth unemployment. I think if I'm right, the latest statistic from StatsSA is about 66.5% of South Africans unemployed. Those are big numbers, you know, and can only lead to a lot of disheartenment and a lot of residual problems that will flow from that, not just economic problems, but psychosocial and psychological problems, with a lot of people suffering from depression and the lack of drive. So what we need to start doing is looking at youth need. I mean, specifically, if we're talking about young people, they need to start looking at what opportunities are there. So there are a number of existing schemes, and I'll just run through a few that are geared towards supporting youth and creating opportunities for them in the workplace. And some of those schemes we also form part of. There's one called the SMME Fund. And then there's also the what they call the Technology Innovation Agency. Mm-hmm. And between them, they have been looking to co-invest about 350 million rand across three tech-focused venture capital funds across the country. And they focus around incubation, funding deals that are technology-based, and then supporting new innovations in technology. And there are other avenues available to youth. For example, we have in South Africa what is called the YES program, the Youth Employment Service Program, and in that there are ways in which youth can get placed within various industries to at least get their first taste of employment while they, as interns, learning the world of work and understanding what it needs, what they need to be doing to be contributing to the economy. But I think, you know, what's critical from a foundation national basis is that children and youth need to be exposed to innovation, because that is probably the most effective way of getting a mental shift, mm-hmm. For youth, to get them to think differently about the world of work, about how they can contribute, to let them become innovators. You spoke earlier on about social media influencers and how that's such a closed market. But, I mean, there are greater opportunities, and I think this is the thing that we need to be talking about in our families, in our homes, that there are greater opportunities than just YouTube channels. and while, yes, you know, a lot of us are encapsulated by social media through whatever, channel that you look, whether it's Instagram or Facebook or any of these other, Twitter, for example, mm-hmm. any of these channels, we have a disproportionate sort of attention on individuals, but not necessarily on the opportunities and capabilities that these platforms provide, mm-hmm. for people to transform their state of mind and ultimately transform their status in society, in their own communities, and in their own households. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that we need to consider is that education is fundamental to being able to transform the status of historically disadvantaged people in our country, to transform the opportunity for young people to thrive, and to leverage on existing policies and programs, not just in South Africa, but global initiatives. For example, the SDGs around SDG 4 and SDG 8, SDG 4 around quality education, and SDG 8 around decent work and economic growth. Both of those outcomes require education, and that then leads to the opportunities that then benefit those children, regardless of where they are from and who their parents are.
Yeah. Yo, that's a lot. If you're joining the conversation, Lesego Mafora is from Jumpstart Foundation, and we just want to talk about, the skills that are important for young people to have. Yo, the education one, I actually, before we end the show, we're going to speak about now those who are struggling with regards to having a solid education. Let's start with those people who are already educated, or at least the potential for meeting those requirements of quality education are in place for them, and see how we can then give them ideas on how to, shift gear to find themselves at least hitting in line with the conversation that we're having this morning. There are gaps. There are gaps. You've mentioned some of them. Technology is a huge one, definitely, that needs to be occupied in the economic system. Perhaps this just, if you have them at the tip of your fingers, the different options that, you would say are available, where in our reach, okay, what are those things that, without me having to travel overseas to, get myself into the system, I can do it right here. Hopefully with minimalistic resources, because most people don't have that kind of money to start off big anyway. What are those that we can look at?
Well, I think I'm going to start at a sort of a macro level. So in South Africa and in Africa generally, what I feel is critical for us to start to grapple with is to create enabling environments. So at a macro level, so at a government level, government needs to be very proactive around creating an enabling environment that allows, at a least cost model, the ability for youth to engage with the economy. A lot of people, know about the internet. They see the internet as a place to find out about, current information and trends, whether you're on Twitter or whatever, or YouTube or whatever you look at. But what people don't realize is the immense power that is in there, the troves of information and knowledge that exist just within those platforms. So what we need to do is to be able to provide a pool of resources that are direct, that can be easily accessed by youth. So for example, I'll give you an example. Elon Musk education, and I'll tell you how to segue into our discussion. Mm-hmm. And he was saying that anyone in the world can become proficient, in fact, can become an expert in any particular field within 6 months of study. That's for me, that was shocking, because it meant that, you know, a lot of these barriers that we have in South Africa around accessing higher education, accessing places where you can learn skills, seem to fall away. And how government can support that is by making sure that we bring down the cost of access to data, because data is, South Africa has one of the highest rates of data cost in the world. Mm. And that inhibits young people from not only from identifying job opportunities, but also from being able to apply for jobs that they are skilled for.
Yeah.
And that's one key issue. Then when we look at, you know, what is in place right now, what can people, young people, leverage in terms of opportunities? One of them right now is the Youth Employment Program, of which Jumpstart is an implementing partner and a host. And in our program, what we do is that we bring youth into our school program to become tutors for foundation-based learners. Mm. And we then give them, they stay on our courses for a year, and in there they learn a whole host of technical and core skills, but then we also support that with soft skills as well. And this is a mechanism that's being applied not just with us, but with other partners as well. And that's a great way. So accessing those existing opportunities so that they can get, you know, a foot in the door, gain some experience, and then being able to propel themselves into the next phase of life. There are other things, other opportunities. For example, there's the Job Fund, which is a presidential project set up around 2011, and the fund specifically looks at entrepreneurship, and the money that's been used in this Job Fund has been targeted at delivering support in four key sectors of the community. The one is enterprise development, the other one is infrastructure investment, the other one, and then support for work and institutional capacity building. And it's the support for work aspect that is critical for this discussion that we're having. The other area where youth can sort of plug themselves in is around an incubator program that exists across various businesses and agencies across South Africa. So it's important for youth to look at what's happening around their own communities or areas where they are able to reach, and try to leverage those. And then I think in terms of strategies, I think there's four key strategies that we can focus on in terms of allowing young people to then be included in the economic growth of South Africa. The first one I'd say is that we need to encourage entrepreneurship, which is something that we're not really taught in South Africa, which is a critical sort of, I would not to be critical, but I think it is something that is lacking in our education system. I think our curriculum doesn't really support, you know, entrepreneurship. We don't drive the creation of new businesses as a skill, which is what it is. You know, being an entrepreneur is a skill, because not every good idea is the best idea, and it will never flourish. But you need to know the fundamentals, and we need to be teaching young people at a very early age the fundamentals of business and how to run a business, how to create your own business, and to use innovation to finding solutions that were not being considered before. So this type of systems thinking needs to be integrated into our schools and places of learning.
Oh yeah, and it needs to be done as a matter of urgency, because we are at a point of a crisis. And so yeah, definitely. Oh, the entrepreneurship one is so real for me, because, you know, people make it sound like, hey, I'm gonna start a business, and it's just like, I don't know how. You know, sometimes you get ideas and you give up on them because you just don't know how. It's the knowledge of implementing it and making it work and being able to monetize it. People just don't know how, you know. Yeah, let me not say a lot. Because I was going to give an example that I thought maybe someone will be offended about it. So Mandy, okay, it's fine. So okay, there's a lot. So we've seen what skills are needed for us then to function in a very fast changing economy. And we've also learned that, you know, according to Elon Musk, you don't even have to sometimes go to the to university where the fees are so expensive to go and do your 4-year degree. You can, if you have access to internet and you've got data, you can learn some of these things very diligently. Give yourself 6 months. At least you'll have the theory of it. And then the practical becomes difficult because you and I know that in South Africa, when you go and look for a job, they like asking you for experience. And I think that's another unfair point, right? Someone who is entering the economic space, and people are entering even at a later age now because of the nature of how bad unemployment is. You'll find that a person will get their first job towards 30 and even after the age of 30, which is not young anymore, and you are expected to like less than 5,000 rand per month. But your life situation and maybe your dynamics of ekhaya, things have changed umdala, and you're expected to somehow make it through that. Okay, fine. People will say, stop being picky. Umsebenzi, it's just a job. Like, do it, and you'll, you know, as you go on, you will advance. Okay, those are some of the, I think, unfair, I don't know, trades that are in our economic system, in the hub in South Africa. But I guess, you know, sometimes people will say beggars aren't choosers. I don't know if we are supposed to really be at that point of being beggars in a country that belongs to us almost 30 years into democracy. Let's look at the gender issue, for example, now, just to get a bit specific about the women politics that are out there. In what ways would you say they are catered for with regards to this move towards the fourth industrial revolution? Do we still have to work twice as hard to make it through in comparison to the other gender?
Yeah.
Lesego, I'm missing you on audio.
Can you hear me now?
There we go. Nice one.
Okay. Sorry about that. I was saying, so that's a very important thing, which I think before we get into that, the other things that I think is important when you talk about.
Okay, Emma Billy, I need you to start again. I heard you when you said, can you hear me now? I heard you right. And then we went back, Nyana. I don't know if it's my line this side.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, you sound good now.
Okay, perfect. I was saying, just before we jump into that, the other two things that I wanted to just touch briefly on, and I'll just run through them, is we need to focus on cross-generational mentorship. And this is also forms part of our next discussion. And then one thing that you touched on now is that we need to break the no job, no experience cycle.
Yeah.
So those are critical strategies that we need to have in place to make sure that young people have equitable access and that women have equitable access to opportunities for IR.
Mm.
But I think dealing with the gender question specifically, this is a critical question. And in my opinion, I think that technology and 4IR does provide an opportunity transform the narrative around gender roles in the workplace. And technology has the capacity to be a great equalizer in terms of opening up work opportunities for women and girl children.
Mm-hmm.
But when we look at the reality of the situation in South Africa right now, practically, is that the reality is that there is considerable inequality in South Africa when it comes to unskilled and low-income citizens. Among them are women and girls.
Mm.
In fact, they are the majority in that. And that we suffer from issues around gender stereotyping, digital illiteracy, inaccessibility to data and discrimination.
Mm.
And that drives, you know, the gender exclusion to a massive degree in our country. Beyond the ICT sector in itself, you know, even if we're not talking about 4IR and technology, women in South Africa generally earn less than their male counterparts.
True.
And, you know, this is a critical problem for us because women are, in our society, we know that women generally bear the brunt of maintaining households and carrying them. Mm. You know, through difficult times, we have a lot of women-headed households. And so there are a number of critical issues that affect women acutely that maybe men are not necessarily experiencing or don't experience to that to a greater extent, even though that, of course, men also suffer from not gender inequality, but just from inequality generally. But it then becomes more acute for women because they are women and we live in a predominantly patriarchal society.
Right.
Now, how do we change this? How do we include women's representation in digital spaces? And I think there's probably four or five key things that we need to look at in terms of remedying the situation. We need to actively implement policies that bring women and girls into the digital space, especially those from poor and marginalized communities. Secondly, we need to address gender discrimination. Mm-hmm. The exploitation of women and gender-based violence need to be eradicated from society, and we need to make sure that women are able to develop in a sustainable way in digitalized society. The third one is to revisit, you know, our existing ICT-specific regulations, make sure that the regulations and institutions charged with monitoring and delivering those benefits address gender equal access to ICT as the same economy, which is not necessarily the case right now. And that also includes financial institutions. They need to be able to have programs that support, you know, women entrepreneurs who are focused on ICT and STEM, looking at learning, supporting them through whatever mechanisms that are available to them, but that are specific to supporting women, and especially you need to work harder to make online spaces safer and comfortable for women. Fourthly, we need to include, you know, feminist voices, stakeholders in the decision-making processes around regulation in terms of ICT and 4IR. You know, making sure that we have the right voices around the table, making sure that women's issues are brought to the forefront to ensure that they are equal stakeholders in the future of the country. Mm. And the last thing is to ensure that, you know, gender policies on e-governance are open, inclusive and accountable, transparent and collaborative. So we do have, there are mechanisms that we can put in place to ensure that women are better represented and are equitably represented within the economy.
True. And I think, you know, it's a difficult one, but when women are represented, because, you know, patriarchy is not just male centered, women sometimes also find them, they also protect and uphold the status quo as it is. So you'll find that if you're just there as a number, it's like having a black person in a white company and they're just there as a face, you know, to meet the quota. But in terms of really making changes with regards to the dynamics and how to function in a racially diverse rainbow nation, as we are so called, that does not really happen. So we need to ensure that women have that voice in those spaces where you are allowed to speak openly and not trying to protect the status quo, because then what's the point if Millicent is in a position but Millicent does not use that position to make sure that she makes it easier, knowing that even if I'm now in a privileged space, there are many other women who are not in that privileged space and they need me to open the door for them to be able to access where I am, you know, at that particular time. So that's very important. We are speaking to Jumpstart and we are heading to the end of our conversation. But before we do, hey, I've got these questions that I really need to ask because it's important. And you guys do also try and work in the education sector. You know, I'm very proud of you to have tutors for foundation phase. We think of tutoring for people who are in matric, FET level and whatever. And you forget, ukuthi abantana, the small kids need that, especially where reading is not something that all the children who go to school at a young age grasp easily. I don't know where we're getting it wrong, but somehow the education system is failing a lot of children in that regard. So we have this appalling, embarrassing reality to accept, you know, in our basic education system here in South Africa. We shouldn't accept it. We should try and transgress it, move beyond that. There are learners who move from grade to grade, and they don't have the basic understanding of the education that's happening in the classroom. So, but they move. And you realize a bit later in life that this child is illiterate, you know. The only skill that this child really has is that they know how to speak. They can articulate themselves, at least in a conversation. Maybe they're not good at holding down an oral task in a classroom, but they know how to speak. And they don't know how to read. They don't know how to write. They sometimes don't know how to express themselves in English, but they can express themselves in maybe isiZulu very well. How do we rescue this cohort of young people where you made it very clear at the beginning of the conversation that education is so fundamental to even the skills that we've been talking about that are not the norm and conventional? Education is very important for that. So these ones, is there a space for them in this society?
A complex and compelling question, and one that is not answered. But let me start by saying that this is something that, we have, and we have for more than 10 years, working, trying to find out how to support that is the best technique. And that's really the best.
Lizero, please just, I don't know, I'm losing you again. I'm so sorry, but I need to make sure that we get you nice and clear. Let's try again.
I'm listening. Can you hear me?
Now, yes.
Okay, brilliant. I was saying, you know, this is one of our key sort of missions that I'm trying to find, where to find how best could be for the system.
Yeah.
This is the fundamental. Now, if I have to end up, I'll try to talk about it. But, you know, when you also spoke about, you know, the historical and the background that happened in this country.
When you talk about when you talk about the what?
The learning backdrop. So we have learning backdrop in math and digital. So a lot of our students are struggling because, you know, they're not learning how to deal with numbers in the right way. They're not learning how to be at, you know, deep for meaning. So there are a number of complex challenges. That is the complex challenge that you got to solve, you know, in 1 year.
Okay, let's just do this quickly. I want to make sure that I get you. I can hear some of the things that you're saying, but it's not quite clear. So I'm going to drop the line, and then I'm going to call you back just so that we can round this up nicely.
Okay.
I want to make sure that I get you. Okay, cool. I'm in conversation with Jumpstart, and the person who is holding the fort this morning for the organization is Lesego Mafora. He is the project manager, not project manager, but he is the strategic manager there at Jumpstart. And we want to speak about, you know, right now as we round up the conversation, the children who are left behind, and there are adults who are also in that cohort. What happens to them? How do we rescue them and try and make sure that even though they don't have the education that is perhaps better required, you have better chances in society if you are educated, how can we still help those people to make a decent living, if possible, using the opportunities that are there at the moment? How can they use technology to their best advantage or whatever, with the minimal skills that they have? If talking is what you know, is there still a place for you in society? Okay, Lesego, I hope it's going to be better. Let's give it a go again. We managed to get some of the things that you were saying. You've been working in this, you know, for at least about 10 years, and it's a problem that you guys have acknowledged. And unfortunately, the children are not properly taught, or they don't grasp how to really function with numbers. And unfortunately, it's not just numbers, even language. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, can you hear me now?
Nice. Yeah. Thank you.
So, I think what is critical is to understand the challenges that we're facing in South Africa.
Yeah.
We have an issue around equipping our kids with the right type of skills to ensure that they have the confidence and the competence to learn in the best way that they can. There's a recent report that I would encourage everyone to look at. It's a report by an organization called the Zenex Foundation, and it really, really explores this question more deeply. And anyone interested should really check it out. But what it really says is that we've got significant learning backlogs at a foundation level around math, around numeracy, and around literacy. And then we've got the same problem at a senior level, so 8, 9, and 10, around the very same things. The statistics in there are
astounding.
They are astounding, and that's the word. They are painful to read because it means that, you know, we risk the that a whole generation is not going to be able to perform at their potential, at their greatest potential, due to the fact that they just don't have the right skills to be able to leverage, you know, their intelligence and their competence. A lot of our classrooms across the country are multi-grade classrooms, and it makes it even harder for teachers to provide the support to children that they most need, because you've got children in one classroom.
70.
Excuse me, but have different learning capabilities. Mm. So it makes it very hard to be able to give specialized care to particular children who may need it, which is why that we feel at Jumpstart that it is fundamental that we focus as a society at foundation phase learning, because the data shows that if kids are equipped at a foundation phase, then the rest of their learning journey is much, much easier. And what that does is that it allows children to really leverage once they get older and have, you know, agency to determine what they want to do with their lives, they are then able to do the things that they really want to do and are not then pigeonholed into what is available. And this is the real change that we need to make, you know, in our education system, making sure that we give kids not just to be employment fodder, you know, for the market, but to be people who can be innovative, bring new ideas, new things that will add value to the lives of their communities and to South Africa at large. And so we need to really look at our learning at our education system, looking at how we teach and where we focus the teaching that we provide to the kids.
So for the someone who... I'm looking at time, Shame. Okay, we've got 3 minutes left.
Yeah, I know. I know we're running out of time. It's such an interesting conversation. But I think the other aspect about it, and that's really at a high level, to say that everyone has a right to basic education, and that's including adult education. And I think this is an area where we probably need to do a lot more work to bring in people who are much older and equip them with the basic literacy and numeracy so that they can be included, you know, in terms of digital literacy. If you don't necessarily need to teach them the same things that you're teaching children, but you need to give them the capacity to be able to operate effectively in the world today.
Are the programs like that? Where do people go for something like that, especially if it's not like going to break the bank balance? People are looking for things, you know, it's hard times. For both adults and for children, where right now is a place where the person can find a solution to do exactly that, to bridge that gap of learning?
So there are a number of civil society organizations that work in this space. But for example, there are also public resources and open resources that people can access. So, for example, there's one platform called Khan Academy, which is a free platform that provides a whole host of subject matter that both children and adults can use to empower themselves and to learn new skills. And then, if you want to learn specific skills, there are a number of, for example, coding is one of those areas that provides an opportunity for people to learn new skills that don't necessarily require high levels of numeracy, but that they can still learn to be coders without having to go to university and learn computer science for 4 years with an honors and come back and then go to apply for work. You can learn, for example, one of the latest sort of skills is called Python. So coding in Python is like coding like writing. It's like writing a sentence. So there's no numbers or anything to that effect. You're just saying this must happen at this point, then this, then that. So it's a logical sequence, and it makes it easy for people who don't have prior experience to be able to learn a new and relevant skill for the world of work today.
Okay, cool. So Khan Academy, Khan Academy. Python, yes. How do you spell that? Is it?
So Python is literally like the snake, P-Y-T-H-O-N, Python.
T-Y-P-H-O-N.
Yeah.
There we go. All right. So, yeah. So I was, because you also helped me, you know, answer, would see an adult who's got absolutely no basis of your proper education, what do they do? So coding is something that they could try out, for example, and then they can, you know, find employment thereafter.
Yeah. But also just looking, the last thing you're saying, look at, it's important, especially for adults, to look at what's happening around their communities. I look at what's missing. Identify the opportunities around where you stay and try to find solutions for problems that your community faces. And there are great opportunities.
Like start an NGO or something like that.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
That's a good one. Thank you so, so much, Lesego. Really appreciate having you this morning, despite, you know, our struggle with the line connection. The information that you gave us was really, I think, impactful. So Lesego Mafora comes to us from Jumpstart Foundation, the strategic relations manager. They really appreciate your time this morning, sir.
Thank you so much, Melissa. It's been a pleasure to be on your
Adventist World Radio.
I wish you all a wonderful day.
Siyabonga, same to you, sir. Same to you. Coming up next, I'm joined on the line with by Mr. Derek Viriri. We're going to speak about that issue. Hopefully, the one that's called the Sabbath, Saturday, Sunday. Which one is it? Yo, we're going to unravel that one in a bit.
AWR. Powered by SID Media.